My whole career has been about putting people to work. COVID was a real game changer. Everybody was remote. 83% of people want community at work. And you can do that inside of a remote organization. My recruiter is not getting through 120 candidates, but the AI absolutely can. AI is going to assist us to put more people to work more quickly.
Welcome to the Entrepreneur's Logbook podcast, where we uncover the strategies and insights driving extraordinary business growth. Today, we're joined by Robin Mee, founder and CEO of MeeDurbee, the nation's leading executive search firm specializes in staffing, professional services, and workforce solutions. With over 36 years of experience, Robin has established herself as an industry leader, serving on the board of directors for the American Staffing Association and earning numerous recognition, such as being included into the Staffing Industry Analyst Leadership Hall of Fame. Her unique bird's eye view of the staffing ecosystem has given her unique insights into the industry trends, leadership dynamic, on technology and transformation. Robin, it's great to have you on the show.
Thank you, Zach. I am super excited to be here today chatting about the workforce solutions ecosystem.
I love that. I think perhaps the best place to start this off, because as mentioned, you've been doing this for like over 36 years. You've been obviously doing this for like a little bit while, but I'd love to hear perhaps a bit of an introduction to who you are, how you even got into this space, and like a bit of a background there.
Sure. So my whole career has been about putting people to work. And I started right after college, even summers in college, there was a Department of Labor initiative that was called the Summer Youth Employment Program. And we employed financially disadvantaged youth, teenagers. So I'd come home from college in the summer, I'd work with my small team to recruit the students and develop the jobs and put them to work for this 10-week period. And, you know, I eventually morphed into for-profit staffing. I found my way to Adecco, which was is a global leader in staffing. And at the time, they were expanding one of their divisions that Peter Yesney, who was my first boss in the industry and who went on to start Staffing Industry Analysts, hired me to open up his Washington, D.C. office. I'm in the D.C. metro area. So I kind of learned from one of the best companies in the world. I learned from one of the best leaders in the staffing industry. I mean, you know, we didn't have a crystal ball. We didn't know he was going to go on and start SIA and that I would start MeeDurbee. Both things happened at about the same time. But I was in the industry for 7 years before I launched my company. And today we are the U.S. nation's leader in executive search and search in general for the workforce solutions ecosystem. And that's kind of a broad title. If you've ever seen Staffing Industry Analysts, they've got an infographic that's got staffing and recruiting at the center of the ecosystem, and then all the goods and services that support the industry around that. And that's the community that we've been working in all these years.
Yeah. And I've worked like a lot of like staffing, like recruiting firm, et cetera. And like one of the things that like I found myself like noticing is that a lot of them are going to be like really specific. There's like a certain industry, like they're going to niche themselves within that industry. But what I like about your approach is you have like a pretty interesting niche in a way where you're in the staffing space, but you're working with other companies in like the staffing industry, which is like really interesting. And one thing I'd be curious to hear about is what kind of like shifts have you seen over like the past few years that you feel have really changed like the game? Because obviously there's been technology like AI, there's been a lot that has changed. And I'm assuming there's a few things that you've noticed that are like, okay, this is big for the industry.
So we're going to talk about AI a little bit later in our conversation, but you know, right now AI is huge. Technology has been, you know, a game changer, but that's been over the last 20 years. And that has evolved to this like mega place where we are today. You know, COVID was a real game changer. You know, pre-COVID, the staffing companies, people did not work remotely. And then, you know, everybody was remote. And then now we're in this like interesting, not interesting period where employers want people back in office. Employees are still saying they don't want to be back in office. I'll give you an example. We did a poll just last week on LinkedIn to say, you know, what, and all of our community, all of our network is our staffing companies. And we have about 600 people, you know, just do a quick pulse survey. Only 3% of them said that they want to be back in office. Everybody else said they wanted remote or hybrid. So we're talking about, you know, the majority of staffing professionals not wanting to be back in office. That's huge. I mean, we've all had to learn how to manage that. We went remote 15 years ago at MeDerby. We, you know, for the longest time, we had an office right around the corner from the White House. All of our business was local. But then over time, our business was national. We had technology to be able to manage a distributed workforce. We found that the only people that were coming into our office was us. And we already had some people that were working remotely, and our technology supported it. So we decided to try it. And, you know, when, you know, 2020, everybody went home in March, at least we had the infrastructure. You know, we didn't know how quickly things would, we didn't know what we were facing, kind of like now, Zach, different reasons. But the fact is, this new way of working has definitely been a seismic shift. And it continues to be on the top of everybody's mind. It's important. Yeah. And then, of course, technology and AI being, I would say, the second driver. But at the end of the day, we're still doing exactly what we did 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago when, you know, Kelly Services, Kelly Girl, and a few other, you know, early pioneers started this, what we call now the staffing industry. We're still doing the same thing. We're putting people to work one job at a time, and it is important work. And it really, at the, you know, is what fuels me every day, is the kind of impact we make on people's lives, putting people, you know, elevating people in their careers, and also helping companies find top talent and do so, you know, in a, you know, in an expeditious way.
It's like a win-win in like two components. Cause like, if you think about like a B2B provider, like they're going to be working with one, a company, they want to provide great results for the company. But the way that you work, there's like the two folds where you're dealing with candidates, you're also dealing with companies. So there's like that dual satisfaction and like fulfillment when you're able to place someone within a good position, advance their career, but obviously provide really good talent to like a company. I feel that's like an advantage, being able to like work in that type of industry. And like, yeah, in your case, I mean, you're helping those staffing firms as well. So you have like that bird's eye view again, like going back to that point. But one thing I thought was interesting, you mentioned you guys were like remote, but did you mention 15 years ago?
Yeah, 15 years ago. And so, Zach, I was kind of embarrassed to tell anybody. Like, I don't even know that we did tell anybody for the longest time, because then it was, you know, really obviously not the norm. And, you know, some people would just say, well, look, they still say, look at how much money you're saving on real estate. And, you know, and there's some truth in that, but there are all the technology costs have way outweighed, like what I pay spend on LinkedIn way outweighs anything I ever spent on office and, you know, even a class A building in Washington, D.C.
But you were like ahead of the curve. Like everyone started somewhat going remote, I'd say probably 2020, 21, somewhat like during like when like COVID hit. But you guys were literally like 2020, like literally 10 years before that. Like you guys already had started somewhat shifting towards that. And one of like the big things that I feel like when companies are going remote is there's definitely a change with like the culture, like the leadership. Like you have to change like your leadership style. And what I'd be really curious about is, again, like that leadership's like style. Is there anything specific that I feel really separates a leader who really build like a resilient staffing like organization from the one who really like struggle when things start getting tough? Because I've spoken to some like recruiting staffing company like the past like few weeks, and the feeling that I've got is that, okay, it's starting to get a little bit more competitive. There's less people looking for jobs, but you have more of that like higher perspective. So I'm assuming you probably have some thoughts for that.
I do. And, you know, it actually goes back to that 15 years ago when we went remote. Part of it was because, you know, I wanted to provide a different kind of culture experience for my employees. I wanted to provide, I mean, people didn't even talk about these words. They were like words people whispered at best, work-life balance. And I wanted, you know, to provide flexibility to my team. I wanted a high performance organization, but I also wanted people that were going to be able to like embrace this job for life. And over the period of your life, you've got different things that you want. I mean, I had one of my now president, Kim Whiteley, when she joined MeDerby, she left her job because she had a young son, I mean, a baby. She was commuting 2 hours each way every day because she had chosen to live out of town. But, you know, traffic can be bad. And she had aging parents actually that were ill, and they lived on a, you know, extended family farm. So she found by coming to MeDerby, a place where she had the flexibility to support her family, not just financially, but also physically. And I really wanted to embrace that because I think there's actually nothing more important. And the statistics now around culture and community building inside of organizations, it proves that is 100% the case. I just done a bunch of research because I spoke at a conference last month, and people, 83% of people want community at work. And that's based on a recent Randstad Workforce Monitor 2025 study. And you can do that within inside of a remote organization. You do have to change the way you lead. But there are so many tools to connect us. We're using them all the time. And as a leader, you've got to figure out ways to engage, support, nurture, develop, reward, celebrate. I just looked at an app this week called Endorse, N-Endorse, which is an app that every time in an organization, it was built originally for hospitals and healthcare, but every time that somebody does something really good, great, you know, your employees are shouting each other out, they're celebrating the little teeny wins, or even just when somebody thanks them for, you know, a job well done. And then they're sharing that across this app. We do something, there's only 13 of us, 12, we're adding one person next week. We do it on our text chain and we're constantly shouting each other out. We're constantly celebrating every little win, but not every company is structured that way. And particularly when times are harder and companies contract, you know, as opposed to having sort of this generosity mentality, it's almost a, you know, if I can't see you, I can't control you, or if I can't see you, I don't know what you're doing. That is not the way you lead in, that's not the way I lead. And that's not the way remote or hybrid works. I mean, we focus on really performance at the end of the day, and there's so many, and empowerment, performance and empowerment, because people, they want their voices heard. They want to be empowered. They want to be, and again, you know, some of the statistics really support this. They want to be rewarded for their work, but more importantly, they want to work in a company where the culture and the senior leadership, and that's the number one thing, the senior leadership creates a culture where they can have opportunity, they can be successful, but they can also have work-life balance, and they can also have flexibility. And those two things are different, Zach. Flexibility is, I'm going to be away for the next 10 minutes because I'm picking my kid up at the bus stop, or I'm going to go volunteer, or I'm going to take a Pilates class at lunch. And everybody's like, hey, have fun, good, you know, so great, you're getting, you know, you're doing that twice a week. You're encouraging people, and leadership, senior leadership's encouraging, not watching the clock, thinking about when they're going to be back. I mean, people want to be empowered, and they want to live their, I mean, I want to live my best life. Don't you want to live your best life? I want my team to live their best lives. And so it just creates this positive culture, and it also creates a real organization that's based on teamwork. And so, and you could do that remotely. We are doing it remotely. And honestly, if the company's done nothing but thrive in the 15 years we did this, I knew I could always get another office, but I don't know. I really did a lot of soul searching 15 years ago to decide to even take that step. It was a big decision. But number one, I couldn't have done it without the technology. Secondly, not everybody in the organization wanted to work that way. So we had some people left and we hired new people. But really, the organization thrives based on, you know, creating a culture of trust and really a culture based in generosity.
Mm-hmm. I was actually going to like mention that because I've had like a conversation, I think maybe 2-3 weeks ago with someone else that was in the recruiting space, like specifically. And one of the things she mentioned is that, like, they didn't do like the whole like remote working 15 years ago, but did it maybe like during COVID 3-4 years ago, something like that. And when they went about actually doing so, they realized that it was going to be quite a big shift. They thought about like, okay, like let's put a leaderboard, like let's add accountability, ownership. There was like the entire team. There was like this great app that they could use. They were like, okay, this is great. They ended up using the app. They realized that everyone felt like really like micromanaged. They didn't feel that they were being like trusted to actually do the job as opposed to when they were actually doing it like in person. And that like really affected like the culture of the company. So I feel that you have to, as you mentioned, like trust like your team members, but also set a culture of like belonging, community, trust, like empowering like your team members. And I love what you mentioned with some of the like the little like small wins. That's like another big thing I'm being on, like in like our group chat and like our Slack workspace. We have like this little channel called the wins. It's like anytime we have a little win, whether it's company focus, personal win, like you want to share that, like you want to be able to encourage like anyone else in your company. So it's like a continuous cycle, like positivity in a way, as opposed to just no communication, everyone's doing what they're doing, and then just like leaving it at that. So no, I mean, I think you're spot on. Like you have to make those changes to be able
to. Well, we've done a couple things. I mean, first of all, the staffing industry is generally an industry that is sales oriented, whether you're a recruiter or a salesperson or a manager. And your compensation, everybody has a base salary, but your compensation is tied to your performance. So that, I mean, if you're working with your people individually and you understand not only what motivates them, but what their personal goals are and their professional goals. And, you know, the work is the important part, but also people have financial goals. And in this business, what you do and how successful you are really is tied into your compensation. So that it's kind of easy. You don't need a leaderboard. You do need to have weekly one-on-ones with your team to understand, you know, and support and give them direction. But, you know, we start every one of our staff meetings. We have two a week. Somebody different leads a meeting every week, and it starts out with a question. And it can be a question like, what was the poster in your dorm room in college? To like mine last week, as I was really, you know, I've been thinking about a lot of things lately. One is, what's your why? Like, particularly right now, I don't want to say they're tough, but there are lots of challenges in the market. And just remembering what your why is. And for me, it's putting people to work one job at a time. And that has not changed throughout the entirety of my career in staffing.
No.
But we've learned. Okay, so my point was going to be, we all know each other so well because of those questions. We know each other's kids. We know each other's significant others, animals, parents, I mean, passions, sports, books, travel. I mean, we know each other in ways that I don't know that I knew my colleagues when I was working in an office together because of just how we share things today.
And I think that's a culture that you have to somewhat set forward. Like you have to let everyone connect with each other, understand people better. So there's like that connection being made, as opposed to just focus on your work, get it done, and just call it a day. So I think that's an important like somewhat culture you have to put in place, especially if you're working like remote. Like if you're in person, you can see people, you can talk, etc. If you're just working from your computer, like from home, I mean, you need to have that connection. I love the fact they mentioned that, but like a random question, and it can be totally like unrelated to work, like a college poster. That's definitely the first time I've heard about that one. But I'm assuming that it sparks some interesting conversation where you get to know people better and then just connect better overall.
Like, what's your favorite Valentine candy? That was one not too long ago. And that, you know, there's research that, you know, we are like, there's an epidemic of loneliness in North America anyway, and people want friends at work. Yeah. And we've got people that are, I mean, everybody's connected. And by the way, we do get together once a year for an annual retreat. Many of us get together for various different conferences. Five of us live in the DC metro area. Four of us live in the DC metro area and one in Virginia. So that's kind of easy to also get together. It's not like we don't. The president of Me Derby went out to Chicago last week to work with Walter. We're now hiring a second person in the St. Louis area. So they're going to co-work on a semi-regular basis. Anyway, so there's ways to see each other and be together without having to be in an office and all the stressors. I mean, you know, when Walter was talking last week about driving into Chicago, he was like, the traffic, you know, I was almost late, the stress. So I was so glad to get back to my home office.
No, I love that. And I guess like just shifting gears like a little bit, because I know we spoke earlier about like technology, and then it brings the obvious question, like AI being talked so much. There's so many different use cases. I think like last time that we spoke, I think you had mentioned that there was like AI, which you could receive like a call and you wouldn't even know it was like an AI like speaking. You would think it's like a real person, and it could just improve like your processes to be like more efficient. But what I'd be curious to hear is, when we're talking about AI and looking at it more from the staffing perspective, How are like the smartest staffing firm like using AI in like their day-to-day operation, especially when it comes to, like screening candidates? Because that's probably one of like the most like time-consuming aspect of staffing there.
Right. Well, we're a 13-person company and we're on this journey just like, Adecco and Randstad are on, biggest global staffing companies are on their journey. And it's all the same journey. And we actually have the same tools in many cases. There, I was talking to the CEO and founder of Bullhorn, which is the leading ATS, applicant tracking system for staffing. And while they've got embedded AI and it's evolving as we speak, he said there's 75 that he knows of AI companies that are competing for the same, business right now. And, some leaders will emerge. So, early on, we last year, not that early, so but for probably the last year, we have demoed so much AI. And quickly we landed on a Team GPT, which is a closed environment. So it's not like you're on Chat GPT that anybody can see anything that you've probably ever done. And so we started using it for, helping to edit an executive summary on a candidate, edit a job description, take a big job description and edit it so that it's, anonymous, or bringing it down to something that's, digestible that you could actually see on your screen. Reference checks, right? So I do this reference check and then I dump it into Team GPT and let it just clean it up for me. They've got to edit everything, but you're using it as an assistant, right? Right? As a digital assistant. Now we're looking at all kinds of AI. And yes, we've got this use case where a candidate applies. We only, like many staffing companies, use many job boards. We use two, our company website and LinkedIn. And so the majority of our candidates come through LinkedIn. So a given month, we might have anywhere from, I don't know, 900 to 1500 candidates for 30 open jobs, because we have 30 slots. Even though we might have 60 openings, we're changing those jobs out on a regular basis. But, say we've got 10 candidates per job applying, that's manageable. But for example, we had a director of marketing recently and it was like 120 candidates. And my recruiter is not getting through 120 candidates, but the AI absolutely can. So candidate hits LinkedIn, in some fashion, they get parsed into Bullhorn. If they have staffing industry experience, which is only about 20%, they get an outreach from an AI agent, and it could be a voice phone call. If they've applied and they get an immediate phone call, that is one use case. But say they don't answer. And so the AI agent will send them a text if we have the phone number, send them an email if we have an email address. And so they will engage with that person however they want to be engaged with. We're doing another poll this week, another survey on LinkedIn. And so far, everybody that we've polled say, because we're giving them, how would you like to interact with an agent? The majority are saying by voice. I want a call. Now, if I've applied to a job, I know, obviously, I'm interested. We want them to do the screen. We want them, or, a screening interview. They will put those notes into the ATS, in this case, Bullhorn. They will stack rank the candidates, and those candidates will then show up on the job to that recruiter who's managing that search. And they'll also go into Bullhorn and they'll do the same kind of advanced search inside our database, again, based on the job description. And then they'll do the same kind of outreach. In that case, not the phone call, they'll do email and text, because again, in that case, the person hasn't given them the authority to call. Now they give them options. They will say, would you prefer to talk to a live person, a live recruiter? Or do you want to talk by voice? So there are options, but then the same, process applies. And then candidates that don't have industry experience, they get an immediate, thank you for applying. We only, we specialize in the staffing and workforce solutions ecosystem. So that's a real goal, but there are so many others. Automated scheduling, search outside of LinkedIn or the database, right? So we've got this new job, and an AI agent could go out into the internet and create, again, short lists of candidates, then either based on our approval or based on, their own assessment, they'd go through that same process. Again, they wouldn't call them because they didn't apply for a job, but they would email or text to engage. So that's just an example of a couple of ways that AI agents have, are very quickly going to change the landscape for sourcing, screening, pre-interviewing, and getting to qualified and interested.
No, I mean, it's absolutely crazy. Like I've seen like the use cases and I'm like, it's like, okay, I mean, there's a level to like how much heavily we should be using this or should be using this like everything on. One thing I'd really be interested to somewhat like hear your take on, because one of the things I've been a very big like somewhat proponent of is like there's gonna be a big wave of like natural like authenticity, like people being want to be like more natural because we're gonna see like so much AI. We don't know what's gonna be real, what's gonna be fake. When you look at these types of tool or even for like the staffing space, do you think that could somewhat impact like the candidate experience, like having just like an AI call them as opposed to speaking to a real person? And do you think that could be some like an issue like moving forward, or do you think overall it's just a plus for like everyone?
Yeah, I don't think we're going to know until we're in it, and we're not doing that yet.
Fair enough.
I think the AI agent, if they're doing a phone call, obviously they have to immediately disclose the fact that they're an AI agent. You've got to give people a choice. Just like, I think you need to give people a choice on how they want to work, remote, hybrid, or in office. Give
Yeah.
the candidates a choice of how they want to interact. If they're fine doing a quick screen, great. If they really want to talk to a person, then that can get scheduled. And the AI agent can schedule that. So, there are use cases, but I don't think we're really gonna know until we get in it. And I don't think I've gotten a couple of voicemails of AI agents. I have not personally engaged with them. On the other hand, I'm not looking for a job. We're considering one company that I'm waiting for the AI agent to call me to interview me for a job. I've given them my phone number, we've identified a job, and three of us are doing that internally just to see what the experience is like. I mean, it's one thing to see a demo, it's another thing to have that call and have
Real
that.
time. Yeah. I mean, I like your take though. Again, like giving the option to like how they want to be like interacted with. And I feel that's even becomes like a plus where it's like, hey, like do you want to speak to some like of someone like AI agent like right now? Or do you want to someone to call you in like 2, 3 hours or something like that? And some people will be, hey, directly just want to speak to someone, get it over with as soon as possible, and then I'll be all set. So yeah, I guess it will come to like preference and just being like really transparent. Like, hey, do you want to speak to an AI agent right now, just for time efficiency, or do you want to like wait some to text, etc.? So no, I love that perspective because I think you're really spot on. But there's so many use cases that, as you mentioned, we're not going to know until we start trying them, experience them, test them. And you're probably going to have to make a few more polls on LinkedIn to get the full opinion of like everyone here.
So
But
I
no.
do want to mention one other thing though, and that is, people that are looking for a job often have a job. And so their ability to, interact with an AI agent on text or an email is pretty easy for them to do from behind their desk if they want to,
Fair.
either do those things or actually have a conversation with an AI agent in the evening or before work. That's another time that people who are looking for a job have to, spend in their job search. So I think it again gives optionality to candidates.
That's very true. I didn't think about it that way. Because if you're looking for a job, and then if you're not dealing with like an AI agent, it's like too early. It's like really late. I mean, there might not be someone to like be able to talk to you. But if you're dealing with an AI agent, I mean, they can help you like any point in time. So it brings
Right.
that efficiency and like time aspect of things here. But yeah, and I guess like one last thing that I'd really be curious to hear your opinion on. I know we obviously talked about AI, like where the world is like going, and if there's gonna be a major crisis with AI and everything like that. But where do you somewhat see like the staffing industry like heading, and what somewhat gets you like the most excited? Because what I'm really curious about is you've been doing this like 36 years. Not a lot of people have done so, and you've been able to see like a lot of things within the industry, what has worked, what hasn't worked. And I'd really just be curious to hear and like your perspective, like what really excites you about like the next few years, next few months, whatever that is.
Well, again, I come back to putting people to work one job at a time. And I think that AI is going to assist us to put more people to work more quickly because we're going to have that assist that we don't have right now. I think, that it is constantly changing. I mean, when you're working with people and really, I mean, people are not making a job change unless it's a better opportunity for them. We're negotiating an offer today where this candidate is going to have an equity opportunity that's worth millions of dollars to them that they don't have currently in their job. And so, I mean, that's a game changer. That's a life-changing opportunity. And then the fact that we're working with companies as they're changing. And there's so much change happening in our world right now. I mean, just look at healthcare. Healthcare staffing is, you know, a big component of the staffing industry. I mean, healthcare staffing companies, they've been, you know, the one of the largest areas of demand for us over the last couple of years. And, you know, pre-COVID was one thing. COVID, these companies exploded, and they're going through a whole kind of normalization now, getting back to those pre-COVID periods. But, you know, that's huge change management, and companies come to us because they need innovative thinkers. They need innovative strategy. They need new thinking to be able to provide different kinds of solutions to hospitals that are feeling pretty exhausted and, you know, a little burned out after the COVID and, you know, dealing with the staffing companies during COVID. So the ability to be part of change, and it has been that way throughout the entirety of my career in staffing. So, you know, we don't lose sight of the mission, but the work itself continues to be super impactful. And also because we've been able to create it, really fun.
Yeah, I was actually going to go back to like what you mentioned earlier with like the why, like being able to place people. And then there's like the two sides of the coin with the candidates and then the actual company. So with all like those innovation, like what it's doing, it's just helping you like promote or like act on like your why, like more fast, efficient manner overall. And you just get to have like a bigger impact. So in my book, I think it's a pretty big win for you, but I could be totally wrong here as well.
Well, and then I, you know, I've had the benefit of being really involved with the American Staffing Association. You mentioned I'm on the board there and staffing industry analyst. There's an association called TechServe that is specific for the IT and engineering staffing. And then the National Association of Personnel Services, NAPS. Those four organizations have really elevated the industry. They support the industry. Several of them are our biggest trade associations. So they lobby and they advocate and, you know, they represent us politically, but even more, they've helped to create these communities that didn't exist like they do today. So that's also being part of this bigger networked community of people who, you know, are all really focused on the same goals in mind, putting people to work, but all doing it differently and different. I mean, there's a staffing company out there for every occupation. So we're supporting every occupation imaginable. And it's pretty darn fascinating.
I love that. No, this was an amazing conversation. Like I've spoken to people in like recruiting staffing, but again, you have like that bird's eye view where you work like all those staffing companies specifically here. But
and we've worked with thousands of staffing companies. So we do have this bird's eye view. We've interviewed hundreds of thousands of staffing professionals. Like it is extraordinary. And then the relationships that have been developed, and it's not just me, it's my entire organization. It just multiplies out that, you know, again, the kind of impact we're making on people's lives.
I can imagine. Perfect. Well, Robin, if anyone wants to get in touch with you, I know you're pretty active with your polls on LinkedIn that you're doing like here and there, but is there like any other platform that you would want people to go to if they want to get in touch with you here?
Sure. I mean, LinkedIn, obviously, you know, connect with me on LinkedIn or our company website, mederby.com. But, you know, all my contact information is in both of those places and I welcome the connection. Thank you.
Perfect. We're going to put that in the description just in case here and then. Yeah, really appreciate your time, Robin. This is amazing.
Thank you. Thank you, Zach.